Welcome to the Forging Honor podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at Forging Honor, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing challenges, building habits and character through action.
In today's episode, Banjo and I do a challenge check-in. We discuss the value of a break from learning, how a change of pace might be good for us. We discuss how leisure is different from idleness. We discuss some good books, as well as our opinions on book-to-movie adaptions. And finally, we wrap up with some practical tips that we hope will help you. Well, it's challenge check-in time. Challenges last for 6 weeks. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as Christian men. The current challenge is to read or write something for at least 15 minutes every day. So, Banjo, how's it going for you?
Doing better than I did last week. After a little bit of a slump, I said, "All right, we're gonna get this week right." Did pretty well. 6 out of 7. I picked up a new book to read. Old book, I should say, but one I've read before. But picked up Les Mis. Have been plowing. Well, I shouldn't say plowing through that. I don't think anybody can plow through Les Mis. I've been trudging through Les Mis, which I enjoy quite a bit, but it is a long book. And we can maybe talk about that some. So I've been doing that. I've been doing some more writing this week and digging around into some more contemporary fiction. And that's been fun. I've been trying to get better about kind of just free form journaling a little bit, doing more writing by hand. I usually write on the computer or my typewriter, but trying to get better about writing by hand in a journal. A little bit more regularly. So that's been good. Kind of some slow incremental progress. How about you, JJ? How's the week been?
Simultaneously terribly and amazing. And I'll go into it. But before I do that, I want to let you know, one of the proudest achievements of my life is that I can say in all truthfulness, I read Les Mis in 3 days. The first time I read it.
It took you 3 days.
3 days.
That's like 300 words a day. I mean, 300 pages a day.
I'll caveat it with, I was on a road trip in the back of a van and had nowhere else to be and nothing else to do.
How did you not get violently sick reading in the back of a car?
Oh, that's not really been an issue for me until actually recently. It became an issue.
Now you have that problem?
More recently.
Because you were driving and trying to read at the same time and that was too much?
I can neither confirm nor deny. I did actually in high school at one point. I used to drive a carpool and I was on the way. It was actually Dave Raymond who we interviewed last week. I was on the way to his class and we had this take home, like not really a full test, but like a take home quiz thing that we were supposed to have filled out, like single sentence answers. And I'm there driving this carpool with other high schoolers. Driving it.
Oh, no.
And I've got it on my clipboard and I'm filling out my answers as we're driving. And one of the girls was
the
like,
capital of Maine is.
Stop. If you procrastinated this much, I'm not sure you're going to get it in on time. Well, I got a B, ladies and gentlemen. I did fine.
And they turned it in after the car crash.
Actually, that vehicle is still with us. At any rate, as far as how I did this week, let's stop thinking about and talking about. Years past, I guess. As far as how I did this week, I did not do well with my daily reading. And I did do a little better with my writing. In sum total for the challenge, 3 out of 7 is all I did. So I have an excuse. That excuse is I studied for really hard and passed a certification at work. So then this week,
congratulations.
What that meant for me was, I kind of gave myself this excuse of I'm going to take a break. So the question I have for you, Banjo, is should we ever take a break from learning?
Oh, that's a great question. That's solid. Way to come off the bat with a 95 mile an hour fastball. That's excellent. Should we ever take a break from learning? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes for sure. If only because, I've been doing devotions with my homeroom at school. And we're going through, the days of creation, and there's a day of rest, and thinking about what God does and the model He sets for us. He rests from all His labor, which obviously God doesn't have to learn anything, but we do. So in that case, I would say like, yeah, that's part of our labor. We have to take a break. And I think it's good as a teacher watching students get to the end of, a 5-day work week, school week, seeing them go, okay, we need to reset, feeling myself go, okay, we need to reset. I definitely feel that. I also just thinking about like in college, I came back to a lot of the same topics, but I often, I enjoyed taking a semester off of one subject and then like getting back into it later and kind of turning over the fields a little bit. So like, having one semester, it was like, I am all in on philosophy this year. And then having another semester where I was like, okay, I'm all in on creative writing. Okay. And then switching back and forth or having kind of a change. Even just like today, I was working on a writing project for myself. And then I was like, okay, well, I got to go. I need to read some other examples of the genre that I'm writing. And so I was like spending, I spent time reading in that genre. And then I went back. I was like, okay, now I need to edit my piece. And I picked up the piece that I was working on and I was about to work on it. And I thought, if I start editing this now, I've got nothing. Like I am not going to do anything useful on this because I've spent all my brain power, just taking in information. I can't use it yet. I got to take a break. I can come back to this tomorrow or in a few hours or whatever, but I need to reset. I can't go into this fresh right now. So yeah, I definitely think you need to take a break every once and again from education, just so that you can do it right. How about you? Are you feeling that? Are you needing that break? Or are you feeling like, okay, it's time for me to get back into it?
I definitely feel like there are merits to a type of break at any rate. I do think you're right. There is the command to take a rest, command to take a Sabbath. But when you look at that command from scripture, as we often, at least in our tradition, pair that with the expectation that we're going to worship and we're learning scripture and we're learning about God. So it's more of a break from our earthly tasks and a look towards the heavenly. So when I look at that as a pattern toward, and thinking through kind of what you were talking about, switching things up, having that change of pace, I think that's maybe the route I would go. So I'm really glad I took a break from some of the intense learning, some of the intense, reading and the lecture watching and note-taking I was doing, the exam prep that I was doing. I'm glad I took a break from that. I'm not happy that resulted in me also putting aside the books I had been working through, because I think that had I approached those, not in a sense of I'm going to learn here, but as an opportunity for rest from the education that I was doing, I think that would have been more reflective of a pattern, of the pattern of work and rest that we see. Because what did I fill my time with when I wasn't learning? Well, I ended up playing some video games and, I sat down and I had some good conversations with friends, but I wasn't necessarily productive with that extra time that I had. So
here's a question.
What do you think of that?
Well, do you always have to be productive?
I think it depends on what you mean by productive. I do think that the word productivity has been co-opted. This is something Cal Newport talks about. It's been co-opted by work culture to try to be directly linked to some sort of output. So no, I don't think you have to be productive in that sense. When I say productive, what I mean is utilizing my time well, such that I'm able to look back at it and say, well, either I was improving my soul or I was improving somebody else in some way, regardless of whether I had any actual output in that time. Do you think that's a fair definition?
I think it is for what you're talking about. I think I've been wrestling with...
Might be a better word to use. And
sure. Yeah,
I don't know what that is, though. I have an idea.
Okay.
There's a book. I can't remember if Dr. Grant referenced it or not. He referenced its ideas. The title is, I think, A Life of Leisure.
I think he did reference that.
Yes, he did reference it. I can't remember the author right now. I'll think of it, or I'll look back at my shelf here in a minute and find it. But, you know, the basic concept of that is leisure is not passing the time with frivolous pursuits, right? A true man of leisure, the true men of leisure of the, at least of the cultural West, were the men that in their spare time were going outside and doing, taking notes on geology and natural plant life and forwarding the sciences, right? Newton was a man of leisure, as it were. So that's, in that sense, I think I want to be, I think I should use my leisure time in that definition or within that scope. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that does make sense. One of the things that I think is really interesting and, like we're thinking about in the Protestant tradition is, you know, we have a value for, there's no work, that is unholy, right? There's no category of work where we can't, you know, as long as we're not actively sinning.
Right. Lewis makes that point.
Right.
Did you just say that? I might have missed it.
No, I was saying that the Reform world, like I'm thinking back to Calvin, right? Calvin's kind of the one who brings this to the foreground. It's like, anybody, you don't have to be a minister in order to bring praise to God.
Right.
And so that leads to that idea of like the very famous Protestant work ethic, which, I don't know how well we're doing at that. Maybe we're doing really well at that culturally, maybe we're not. But for myself personally, thinking about that idea of, well, I need to, I've been given this time on earth, I need to make the most of it. For me personally, especially in late high school, early to middle college, which is not that long ago, so I'm still kind of processing some of these things. I had a mindset of like, if I don't justify my salvation, if I don't prove that I was somebody that was worth saving by the things I do, by the amount that I produce, by the lives I touch, by any of those metrics, stated or unstated, if I don't perform properly in those ways, I wouldn't have phrased it like that. I would have couched it much more reformed and elegantly. But if I don't perform in those ways, then I am, am I going to make it to heaven? And God's going to say, well, you're here, but I could have saved somebody else. I would have gotten, more bang for my buck, basically. That's very clearly not the picture that Scripture has. What I was doing in that was a works-based righteousness. I was trying to justify my salvation. And I still think about that sometimes with what I'm doing. I think about, am I approaching my education? Am I approaching my work? Am I approaching my, whatever it is, am I approaching that in a way that says, well, I have to do this, and I have to do this perfectly because otherwise I'm a failure? When the reality is, well, yes, I am a failure, but God isn't saving me because I'm supposed to be successful. He's saving me because he knows I can't be successful.
Right.
And so trying to, and yet still not saying, well, what shall we say then? Shall we laze about that grace may abound? Well, I'm pretty sure that's by no means.
So that gets to that idea of the leisure idea. And I want to clarify, the book that I'm referencing is Leisure, the Basis of Culture, by Joseph, or maybe Joseph Piper. It's Josef Pieper for those interested. And it gets both. Dr. Grant referenced it, but then looking at my notes on this book, now I'm realizing Mr. Raymond referenced it last week as well, because Piper makes the point that leisure, according to a classical definition, approximates to how we would interpret the liberal arts. And knowledge, in many ways, is based on contemplation. And that's something Dave Raymond specifically mentioned, was taking a thing before you and examining it and really being contemplative about it.
And that's an idea that, to pause on that for a second, that idea of contemplation is one that I've been thinking a lot about. I've been, dare I say, contemplating it a lot lately.
Hey, there you go. Getting because, meta about it.
Yeah, right. Meditating about it.
But I'm sure you're almost ready to be a dad. You're so close.
Almost. Wow. Almost. That was bad. No, but I've been thinking about, like, for me, like, I have a 45-minute drive to work. So, I'm, you know, as little as 45, as much as an hour, depending on traffic. And I listen to podcasts during that time. I fill the time with podcasts. And for the most part, you know, it's kind of junk podcast. It's just entertainment. Lately, it's a lot of, like, you know, fantasy football stats. You know, I want to keep up to date. And but I always want to have this, like, noise going. I want the sound. I want people talking, because I you know, it's kind of anxiety inducing to sit in a car for me. I don't know about for you, but for me, it's kind of anxiety inducing to sit in a car for 45 minutes in silence. Like, after about minute 30, I start talking to myself, you know,
right.
And I don't really like doing that. So I would rather just listen to somebody else talk. And I think it's fine, but in terms of contemplation, that means I'm not doing very much just dead thinking. You know, there's not much boredom. I don't want to be bored. So, and I don't have to be, so I'm not.
So there's a balance in there somewhere, because I don't think anyone would say, well, listening to podcasts, at least the type of podcast I know that you banjo listen to, is a bad thing. And
right.
Kind of getting back, one of Piper's later points is he makes the point as leisure should be opposed to acedia or idleness. So you're not simply being, you don't want to be idle with your time, right? There's a good instinct there to avoid idleness. And yet if you're filling that space in your vehicle with talk and ideas, that as great as they might be, if they're not taking root in you and having an impact, they're wasted in a way. So maybe it is good for you to rather sit in boredom and learn to be comfortable with that instead first. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's just an idea.
And I don't, for me, it's like, well, I, you know, 45 minutes, especially there's some areas where it's like, okay, well, I know that if I listen to a podcast and I come home, I'm in a better mood than if I just kind of sit in nothingness for 45 minutes, at least so far, right? Maybe I can build up to that. But there's other areas where, you know, I've told myself that, well, I should do that with the podcast, like doing the dishes, you know? It's not that long. And I've been telling myself, well, I can be more productive by, you know, cramming in an extra 15 minutes of podcast listening. But this week, I've been taking the time to say, okay, what if instead of listening to a podcast, I just take that time to think? I just use that you know, and I'm doing dishes by hand. We don't have a washing machine. So, you know, it's kind of extended. Doing that and just thinking and just letting my mind wander a little bit. And it's boring. And so far, it's not a lot of fun, I'll be honest. But I think it's good to have that time to just, like, let things sit. And it also makes me want to, like, fill my mind with things that are worth thinking about. You know, so, like, Les Mis, there's a quote from Les Mis that has just been, like, churning in my head the last few days. Where, you know, he's talking about, like, as long, somebody said, as long as men are oppressed, women are enslaved, and children remain ignorant, we will need books like this. And I thought, that's really interesting. Like, why are those three things areas where we need a book like Les Mis? And so I've been thinking about that. And, like, is that the state of humanity right now? And that was a quote from the 1800s. So, you know, what has really changed between now and then? So things like that, just like having the space for those things to wander. So I don't know, do you feel like you have those spaces? Do you let yourself be bored, or are you kind of always on the go?
It really depends. I find in the mornings, I'm much more likely to want to, as you put it, be on the go. So I have twice a week, an hour drive to a client's office. And on the hour drive there, it's podcasts, I'm gearing up, I've got my coffee, I'm ready to go. And that kind of gets me in that mood. But often on the drive home, I've got things to process for my day. I still have work stuff on my mind. In no way will it be productive for me to listen to a podcast, because I won't be truly paying attention. I won't learn anything from it. So oftentimes I will sit in silence for about the first 30 minutes of that drive. And then the last 30 minutes, I might turn on some music or something, kind of get my head out of work mode, and into family mode. And I find that's good for me. I'm not sure that that's the best thing. It's just what has worked for me so far. On the days where I'm not making that drive and I don't have that gap, that separation, there's a lot less time for me to get any podcasts in or audiobooks or anything. It's more, you know, moving to the next task at work. And so there, what that opens up on those days, my evenings are a little more open. because I didn't have, you know, 2 hours in the car. And those evenings are the ones that I in theory should be filling, at least in my opinion, with books, or with quality writing, quality content of some sort. Do I always do that? No. You know, as I said, this last week I ended up playing some video games. Mostly there's this little train game I like, which fools my brain into thinking I'm being productive because it's all about making all the best connections between cities and that kind of thing. And it feels very fun in that sense, but I don't know.
Can't that also be like, that's work. That's to some extent it's working a muscle, right? Like, isn't that kind of building something up and taking maybe I like to think of it like a nonlinear approach to a problem.
Maybe. And it is good to take breaks. I was listening to a podcast today. Cal Newport had an episode out on taking breaks from work for the sole purpose of being able to come back better to work. And I think that's quality. What I want to avoid is saying, well, someone told me I should be taking breaks in order to be better at work. And so then all of my time turns into, well, I'm taking a break right now, so I'm going to watch a movie, or I'm going to play video games or something. And that's I think is on the whole, not necessarily the correct mindset. There is room for breaks in there somewhere. I think I could end up kind of talking in circles here if I'm not clear about definitions though. So
what's more your problem? Is your problem taking a break? Like, is it harder for you to take a break, or is it harder for you to get moving, to start working?
That entirely depends on the week. Like, it's almost as if Monday morning defines my entire week. If I have a productive Monday morning, it's really hard for me to stop. If I don't have a productive Monday morning, it's really hard for me to get going on Tuesday. That's it. So I focus a lot of effort on my Monday mornings.
So if you get that day right,
any hard science behind it or any data to back that up, I just know that's how I feel.
Well, you know, you have the days that work and the days that don't. I feel like that's, or the ways that work. You know, it's kind of like in football. You, like, they talk about, you know, you got to get the quarterback in the first, and at the first part of the game, you got to get the quarterback, young quarterback, you got to get them like an easy down. Like, you got to get them an easy play, like an easy completion. And if you don't get the easy completion, like, their mentality is going to be off for the rest of the game, you know? So I think about that sometimes when I'm like, okay, what am I going to do today? I got to start with an easy completion. And so maybe I'll like, if I'm going to start my day, I need to start my day with something I can and want to learn about, instead of having something that I, you know, struggle to learn.
Absolutely. And I think I'm both in that scenario, and for me as well with my work, there's a good instinct there of, we should on the whole be utilizing our time well. In fact, I think we should always be utilizing our time well. What we're really having a discussion about is, what does it look like in the hour to hour, right? When I look at a complete day, I want that day to have been productive in the true sense of the word. I want to have produced something. But does every minute of that day need to have been quote unquote productive, right? I think that's what we're having a conversation about.
I wonder if to change that thought a little bit, or to push back, maybe not push back, but I don't know. Here's a thought. You know, if we're thinking about, you know, to break into the good old Westminster Shorter Catechism, which is what everybody was hoping for. So, you know, if you had us, you know, at minute 20, you know, you can check that off on
your bingo card right there. Yeah.
On your bingo card. Yeah. But if we go back to, you know, our Westminster Shorter Catechism, you know, like, what's man's chief end? Was to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And I wonder, that seems like a really unquantifiable purpose to me. I'm not sure how you go about quantifying how much you've glorified God and enjoyed him by the end of the day, which isn't to say that, like, you know, having metrics is a bad thing, or not valuable in any way, but it's just, I wonder if, you know, what does it look like on a day where maybe, you didn't necessarily produce something? Can you look at it and say, well, okay, God was glorified in this day, regardless of how I did? Do you think that changes the mindset at all?
I think yes. I think it's a very good point. I think when I say, oh, I want to have been productive in some way, I'm more talking about my Monday through Friday. So looking at a Saturday or a day off, maybe I'm on vacation. I think those are the times when I lean more heavily into the enjoying him. And in proper enjoyment of God, I am glorifying him. What does proper enjoyment look like? There's a serious question, because I've had friends tell me, oh, I'm going to, you know, kick back, have a few drinks and cut loose a little bit. And that's enjoying a great gift that God has given me. So that's enjoying God. And enjoying his gifts does not necessarily equate to enjoying God directly, because if we don't, like, we might enjoy a gift somebody gave us, but if we divorce that from its intended purpose or from the intent of the person that gave it to us, we're not using it in the way that it was designed for. And in the same way, we do that with plenty of God's gifts.
Education being one of them, we could say.
Exactly. But I mean, in a case, say, maybe I'm on vacation and I decide I'm going to go on a hike and enjoy nature. Am I doing that so that I can see the glory that God has put in nature? Or am I doing that purely to satisfy my own desire just to get away from work? Either way, I'm going on a walk in nature. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with the walk in nature, but I think there is a big sense in which the purpose matters there.
Yeah, and the purpose is going to be a little bit, undefinable. It's easy for us to mistake our purpose, I guess, is another way to say it. When you think about the books that have been helpful for you, thinking about rest and purpose, I don't know if I've ever asked you this. Is there a book that you would point to where you said, this was a book that helped me figure out my purpose, or, you know, helped me figure out my, you know, what I wanted out of education or anything like that?
Yes. One book that had a very large impact on me just a few years back, and I wish I had read this before college. I read it after college, and it had an effect on me. It's The Intellectual Life by, I'm going to mispronounce this because he's French, Antonin Sertolange. That's Sertolange, or maybe it, if you were to pronounce it like an American, it's Sertolanges. Anyway, if you know that book, you know who I'm talking about. If you don't, good luck trying to spell that. But The Intellectual Life, subtitle, it's Spirit, Conditions, Methods. That book had a big impact on me. I will caveat that with he's a Catholic, very heavily influenced by Thomas Aquinas. So there's at least one chapter in there that leans heavily into that. And I basically read that and went, I kind of disagree with a lot of this, but I get what you're trying to get. I get what you're trying to say. And I think from a Protestant perspective, a lot of it had to do with his argument for the purpose of the so-called intellectual life. And he tried to relate it a lot to kind of the ancient Greek philosophers, which is great. And I like the Greek philosophers, but ultimately, you know, the purpose is to glorify God, learn more about him, you know, be as kings and search things out, right? As Proverbs says. So anyway, with that caveat, I would say that book had an impact on me in terms of just kind of the inspiration for actually doing any of this, for actually learning about any of this. And he just advocates for a lot of kind of what we're doing, making time seriously every day to pursue some endeavor in the pursuit of knowledge. Now, he is writing at a time when, well, maybe he wasn't less distracted. I don't know. He says at one point, it's unreasonable that any man shouldn't be able to find at least 2 hours in his day for these pursuits. And I looked at that.
2 hours?
No. I looked at that as a young dad of, at the time, one son, and went, okay, I'm going to shoot for 30 minutes.
That's stretch goal.
But
achievable.
I think it is a goal that it's a worthy goal. And I think, like, he's being somewhat reasonable. He's not saying take your whole day, abandon your day job. Right. He's looking at it as, you know, he's writing to people that might be factory workers or might be farmers and have full time day jobs. And he's just saying at the end of your day, set aside this time very intentionally. I really appreciated it, and it really helped me have a renewed interest and vigor in my pursuit of simply reading, of knowledge, and of learning more about God.
Do you find yourself going again to do you spread out? Do you choose different topics, or do you find yourself going again and again to kind of like the same topics to enjoy learning? Do you enjoy learning the same, like going deeper in one subject, or do you like learning about multiple different kinds of subjects?
Both and. I think there are definitely the topics I've continually returned to. I'm very interested in computer science, so I tend to read about that without too much effort. And then there are other times where I go, here's a book I haven't read but probably should have, so I'll go pick it up. I'm not anywhere near the level of Dr. Grant or even of our first guest that we had on for this season, Kelly Nolden, where they seem like they have this insatiable curiosity, and they'll just keep pulling the thread, as we talked about. They'll just keep tracing these lines.
About anything.
It's incredible. I would love to get there. But right now, I think, right, as a young man with limited time, it's the place I'm going to start is setting aside that time either at the start or the end of my day and making even 15 minutes for it. I think that's all I would encourage anyone else to do anyway.
Yeah. One of the things I've been trying to do, I've been watching a lot more football, both, college and pro.
Well, you got
to
get that fantasy league, those ratings up.
That's right. I got to see my guys. I got to know how they're doing. I got to know what changes to make, it's an important thing. But because I've been watching more TV, I've been trying to make use of, there's a lot of downtime in football. And there's a lot of commercial breaks. And so I've been trying to, whenever the commercial break comes on, I mute the TV and I'm reading for as long as the commercial break is on. And at first I thought that was going to be really obnoxious and I thought I wouldn't be able to focus. But it was actually a lot easier than I thought. And it was actually more useful. It makes the commercial break so much more, so much less obnoxious to me. It's like, oh, great, commercial break. Yeah, it's time to read. And the other thing that I enjoy about that actually is that I often get to a moment in the story where I'm like, oh, I want to keep reading. But then, okay, well, the game's on, so I stop. And then when the next commercial break is on, I'm so excited to keep going. I'm like, oh, this is great. That was another question I wanted to ask you about. It's a little unrelated. How do you feel about writing in books? If you're learning on a subject, you're talking about the practical.
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you recommend people writing in books? Do you write in your books, or is that sacrilege?
I'm going to hold off from recommending anything. I'm a young guy, don't know much. However, for myself, I used to hate writing in books. I used to think it was basically sacrilege. I've really come around on that. As Dr. Grant said, if it's a more precious copy or it's antiquarian in any way, definitely I'm not marking that up. But, I buy a lot of paperbacks or just, modern books that have been released within the last 50 years or so. And there's plenty of copies of those floating around. Yeah, I'm writing in those, mostly in pencil. I don't use a highlighter. I just like a pencil. That's pretty much all I use. Now I do, if I'm sitting and I'm reading a book like the couple we've mentioned so far, the one by Piper and the one by Sarah DeLanger, those I actually will have a piece of notebook paper as well. And one thing, I don't know why I learned this. I think someone told me at one point a good idea was take those notes and use them as bookmarks in your book. So like that happened with this one. When I picked up Leisure, the Basis of Culture, which I haven't read in over a year, but here's my notes sitting in various places in the book. And as I open it up, I can quickly see a summary of the book simply by flipping through those notes, because I just kind of write down big ideas as I come across them. That's hugely helpful. Not as great for fiction, because that's not the point, but for nonfiction, I really like that. And there are also underlinings and notes and maybe some stuff on the margins in those books as well. So what about I don't know. Knowing you, I feel like you're either strongly one way or the other.
Well, it's funny. I up to a point, I have a strong revulsion to writing in a book. It feels wrong. Mostly because, like, growing up, like, books were my friends. Like, these were I cared about them in a physical way. And so for me to be like, I'm going to write in it, felt like a desecration. But as I get older, even sticking with like, well, this is a friend. It's like, well, I'm talking with the book. I'm communicating with the book and learning more about it. And actually, this last, even these last few weeks, as you know, my second year of teaching, as I'm going along with the students, stories I've already read and taught, rereading the story and taking notes on, you know, on it. I prefer to like copy it out of the book and, you know, make a photocopy and then mark that up. That I like doing that a little bit better. But even just like marking up the story, it's like, oh, this, I get so much more out of it. Like I enjoy the story so much more if I'm high, you know, if I'm circling and I'm scribbling in the margins and I'm right. saying, oh, like where, you know, what is this? And, what is this a symbol to, or even just saying, or like today, I was teaching a Flannery O'Connor story and there was a paragraph that I was like, I don't know what is going on here. Why is this paragraph in the story? And I just circled it and like put a question mark by it. And then as I was teaching the story, it like hit me. I was like, oh, this is what this is about. And then I got really excited and I got to teach that, that moment. And so even just like having that kind of physical notation there to say, hey, like, I think this is important. Go find out why is I'm finding that really helpful, personally. So
absolutely. That's the exact, I cut you off, but I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that I'm looking forward to buying more books.
Yes.
That where I can say like, this is a copy that I'm writing in. This is particularly for this reason.
Well, that's exactly the reason I have, I think 3 or 4 copies of Lord of the Rings. You know, there's a couple, or 2 of those copies at least were brought in to our marriage by my wife. And, you know, one's a cheap paperback set. One's a really nice hardcover. We don't touch the hardcover except for just the pure joy of reading the book. But then I also have a copy of my own that, or I have a couple copies of my own. One of them, that's my mark it up book, mark it up copy of Lord of the Rings. And I've gone through that and I've marked it up and I've, you know, I've anywhere there's Elvish in there, I have the translation there in the margin form, like stuff like that. Just for the fun of being able to go back through and enjoy other aspects of it, aside from just the pure joy of reading it.
Quick tangent. Can I get your 90-second take on Rings of Power?
I don't know if the words I would use movie. To describe it are appropriate for this podcast.
Okay. But have you watched it, or are you just considering it?
I watched the first season.
All of it?
Yes. I was one of the 30% of viewers that actually finished it. So
that's great. Cause I only watched the first, like, I don't even know if I finished the first episode. And
I forced myself through it. And partially it was my wife as well. We both just needed something to watch when it was coming out. So we did.
Yeah. Have you tried the second season?
No, I can't bring myself to do it after watching the first. I just can't.
Do you know what I really enjoy doing though?
What do you enjoy?
I really enjoy watching YouTubers hate watch it. Like I don't watch the show, but yes. I love watching YouTubers leave their review of it and go, this is awful. That brings me joy.
That is a fun pastime. I think my biggest issues with it was just watching the first season. It just felt like they had stripped the original material of everything I loved about it. And that's basically what it came down to. I just couldn't find, I never had the joy watching that I had, even watching the Peter Jackson adaptions. Like I thoroughly enjoyed those. Watching them now, having read Lord of the Rings as many times as I have a lot of gripes. At the time as a high schooler, I was in love.
Oh, they're fun.
They're very fun. I have come nowhere close to that with the Amazon adaptions.
Yeah, I hear you.
This is going to be the lowest rated episode now, not because of any reviews, but because now all the AI out there is going to mark down this episode and make sure no one hears it, because it's going to hear the words Amazon and Rings of Power and just say, no one's allowed to hear this now.
It will say that we had all these listeners. Are you interested at all in the War of the Rohirrim thing?
I was until I saw the trailer, and the first thing in the trailer was a live action shot from Lord of the Rings, and I was like, oh, they're just trying to capitalize off of their past successes. Like you can't do that. You can't rest on your laurels.
It is tough. They did that with one of the Marvels movies. They showed a clip from all of the, like, from Endgame, and they showed it in the Marvels trailer, and that's when I was like, oh, so this movie's gonna be terrible. That's how you know.
It's sad. Yeah.
I don't know. I have a little bit of hope for this other one, but
I think as a total aside, and while it is a check-in episode, and we can do this, I think that in general, book to movie adaptions are, I'm so hesitant with them, always worried about them, because there's always what I feel the purpose of the book was, And then there's also the, how do you adapt some of these books to the screen, is a tough part. So I think, like, for example, a lot of folks had gripes with Dune because it changed a lot from the book. However, I think that that's it actually captured the original intent behind the book much better than folks realized. So there's an example where you kind of have to weigh those two. Lord of the Rings did less of the intent, I've realized over time, but it captured so much of the book and it used so much of Tolkien's language and so much of such as his great character, so much of the flavor, that it just feels like the books, even if it's not necessarily telling the same story exactly right, or even if it's missing the point in some areas entirely. So those are two different ways to adapt. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. To bring it back to our, you know, to our initial conversation, if folks are looking for something to read in this last, you know, in this next week, and they want to learn about a different subject, I highly recommend Adventures in the Screen Trade by William Goldman. For those of you who are fans of The Princess Bride, or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, or All the President's Men, any of those movies, William Goldman was the screenwriter for those movies, and he was a prolific writer. And he wrote a fantastic book, Adventures in the Screen Trade, where he lays out what Hollywood is like and how it works, and how to write a screenplay, like, and what the bits and pieces are, how, you know, with the nitty gritty stuff of how to write a screenplay and how to do an adaptation, which he talks quite a bit about. And that book has turned me around on book to movie adaptations. In the main, I used to be very like, whoa, I can't possibly be as good. We can't, you know, they can't do that. But his book really like helped me to appreciate like how hard it is to adapt a book to a film, and how different those mediums are. And so like the things I look for now in a good book adaptation are much different now as a result of that book. No Country for Old Men, for example, I think like I'm almost convinced, I'm not quite there yet, but I'm almost convinced that the movie is better than the book.
I've had multiple people tell me that.
It's so close for me. I love the book. I really love No Country for Old Men. I think it's beautiful and poignant and fun to read. But all of the things that, and it's worth saying, Cormac McCarthy initially wrote it as a screenplay. But I think the Coen brothers maybe did it like the way it was meant to be. Like, I don't know. They really nailed it. Anyway, folks, thank you for hanging in there. This has been our most all over the map episode yet.
I'm
having fun. I'm having fun with this sort of stuff. We're learning. Maybe we're taking a break from our regularly scheduled program.
It's good. It's good. On the regularly scheduled program, what changes, if any, do you intend to make on our last 2 weeks of this challenge?
I kind of already talked about it. I want to make sure this week that I'm spending intentional time during that reading period, marking up a book, and trying to have that conversation kind of with the book, so to speak, taking more notes, being more thoughtful, even with my fiction, finding ways to kind of be more interactive there. Also, I had a moment this week that was just as I was reading some things, I've been submitting some literary pieces to some different magazines and getting some rejection slips back. And at first I was kind of upset, but then I went and kind of read some things that are out there and I was like, oh, I'm not that good. I'm not as good as most of the people that are getting published today. And I just like keeping that humility throughout the week, and saying, okay, I don't know that much about this art form. I really don't. I have a lot to learn, and just like coming to the table with that kind of humility, and eagerness and curiosity and wonder is like, that's just going to be a big part of this next week for me. So how about you? Any changes?
I think similarly, I want to work on some of my note-taking. But as part of that, one of my goals is to reread a book I've read before that I already know decently well. So it would not be, for example, I'm working through Dracula right now. I've never read that. I'm not going to focus too much on taking notes, annotating that or anything. Instead, so I do plan to finish that. But I also intend to take something, probably a short fiction piece that I've read. You mentioned Cormac McCarthy. That makes me want to dig into one of his. So I haven't made a decision on what yet, but I want to try doing that with a fiction piece that I've read before that I already know the basic beats of. I already know the direction it's going in, and I can kind of approach it from that perspective. I think that would be really fun.
Nice. Love it.
Very good. Well, as a reminder, challenges last for 6 weeks. That's a total of 42 days. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as Christian men. The current challenge is to read or write something for at least 15 minutes every day.
This has been the Forging Honor Podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com. There you'll find information about our community, The Forge, and how to join other young men seeking to glorify God in thought, word, and deed. You'll also find blog articles, book recommendations, and more ways to grow as a Christian man.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend or family member about Forging Honor. We would also appreciate it if you would take a moment to like and subscribe. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, a rating and review only takes a moment, and it goes a long way towards growing the Forging Honor community.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of Forging Honor. We'll see you next time.